This is the ColoradoHockey.com podcast brought to you by AbsFam. ABSFAM.com for the coolest hockey shirts you can't find anywhere else because they're not available anywhere else. Check out the Dutchie, the Landy, the EJ, the Picks, the Varty, the Skilly, the Mac, and so many more. AbsFam.com. Today is a special day because we're having a conversation with a man named Dan Price. Dan Price and his team created what we all know today as the Avalanche logo. And in 20 years, it hasn't changed at all because it is that awesome. It is the thing that we all gather under. It is the thing that brings people together who wouldn't otherwise have conversations together, who wouldn't otherwise cheer together. The Avalanche logo is probably the best in the business. And the only thing that we got when we asked for questions for Dan Price were conversations about, please don't change that logo. We love it. It doesn't need a redesign. This is what we want. We love it after 20 years. Be forewarned, my friends, this won't be 100% about the Avalanche. Of course, it's going to be about hockey and it's going to cover the Avalanche, but it covers some of the other logos that he's done for a number of major prominent teams. Dan Price is a ninja, a master, and he brings along a style that is timeless and classic. There's no fadness whatsoever. This is something that will be cool in 20 years, something that's going to be cool in 30 years. But before we get too far...
Yeah, you shout out to the AVS fam. Colorado hockey's coming in, man. Let me teach you how to Dutchie. On the ice, the Dutchie touch. Hashtag volley volley. The crazy saves this so gnarly. The Condor and Landy. Team Butte is sweeter than candy. Colorado hockey's coming in. Colorado hockey for the win. Tune into the podcast, we're live. Colorado hockey has arrived. ColoradoHockey.com.
Any given season, we will celebrate the 30 to 35 players that touch NHL ice for the Colorado Avalanche that year, but there is so much more going on that most people don't know about. Can you imagine being at a game without the in-game music from DJ Triplett? Check that podcast out. What about the commentary and the writing and the Twitter feeds you get from people like Mile High Hockey, Burgundy Brigade, or BSN? Check out those podcasts. We're on a mission to talk to as many of these people as we can find, the people that make it happen behind the scenes, the people who make this seamless, the people who make it fun. And today, we get to talk with Dan Price, who was the creative director of the team that brought us the Colorado Avalanche logo. In this podcast, we go deep on logos, secondary logos, word marks, design philosophy, and everything in between. Dan and I were talking shop well before we got the microphones up and running, so we picked this up right in the middle of the conversation. And to bring you up to speed on this conversation, we are asking him a question we got from AJ Haefeli about the Mammoth logo. AJ asks, did he play a role in the design of the Mammoth logo, which was clearly patterned after the Avs? If not, is it flattering?
So the Mammoth logo was a project that we were hired to handle by Kroenke Sports. So Kelly Kotcher is their creative director. She replaced me. I was the creative director with the Denver Nuggets and later the Nuggets and the Avalanche from 1990s. I started with the Nuggets in 1987, and I left the Nuggets Avalanche in 1996, December 31. So after I left, Kelly Kotcher came in and replaced me. So the Kroenke Sports and Kelly Kotcher and some of the other people over there have returned to Adrenaline for certain identity projects, including the Mammoth and including the Altitude Network logo, the television logo. So the Mammoth logo, Kelly Kotcher had concocted the idea of the curling tusk and the M for the skull. And she just asked us to take her idea and turn it into a logo. So we did work on that as an Adrenaline project. We also did the Colorado Outlaws logo for outdoor lacrosse. So yes, we were the agency that did the Mammoth logo.
So you've got a bit of a style then, because I can think of all those logos in my head and what they look like and how they work. But what are some of the things that people wouldn't expect that you have to work in? What are some of your parameters or your limits, or what do you need to consider as far as how the logo looks in black and white or in color or from far away or on a jersey? Or
you ask some amazing questions, because a lot of what you're talking about is what we preach. Okay. As an example, if you notice logos, especially in the NBA, you saw it a lot during the 90s, they were taking all of these logos and they were pillowing them out, if you will. They were making them puffy and they were making them dimensional, and it's almost like somebody discovered that you could do gradients in Illustrator and they ran with it. So you had teams like the Phoenix Suns that had a logo that you couldn't even reproduce with embroidery because it went from a gradient yellow to a gradient red. So in stitching on their jerseys, they had to literally have a line where the yellow stopped and the orange started and the orange stopped and the red started. Adrenaline has always prided themselves on doing logos that are more classic. And by classic, I mean we didn't change our ideas on logo development just because the 90s went through an evolution. We stuck to the classic two-dimensional flat type logos. And it's our belief that if a logo can't look great in black and white, it should never go to color. So in our process, we design all logos in black and white, and we don't even think about color until the logo is approved in black and white.
So when it comes to color, do you have a theory on the color story on how you decide what you're going after? And here's a loose one for me, just to give you an idea what I'm talking about. And this is maybe a little, I might be talking out of school, but the idea that basically you need something that represents a true black, a true white, and something in between. So if you look at the Carolina Tar Heels, I think they are, they have a light blue, which is in the kind of the lower end of, if you took it to grayscale, you would see it, you know, it's a real nice kind of low-level gray, but there's some other teams that go up higher with that. But either way, if you have the contrast, that one in the middle is almost what tells the story more than the ones on the end, because they're just anchoring whatever that story in the middle is. Is that?
Well, there's some reality to designing in black and white is that it forces you to use shapes against one another versus outlines, okay? So a logo that is done in color from the beginning could include two colors that when you go to grayscale or to black and white, you can't take one and make it black or make it white because it doesn't maintain the shape of the logo. So when we design logos in black and white and then you change it to color, it forces you to work with a color selection that is, like you're describing, lighter colors and darker colors. But in that breath, when we were working on the Nuggets logo, which was a recreation we did, we were there, when I say we, I always speak of the department, and the people that I worked with, but the Nuggets had the rainbow logo when I got there, and we changed it to the mountain peak and the word Nuggets underneath, which is still used today, but it's kind of been replaced with the crossing pitchaxe. But when we went to color on that, it was our intent to create a color that would almost look like black, but it wasn't black. So black kind of has this stigma about it, you know, and you think of the Raiders and there's
exactly what was in my head.
Yeah. Yep. And we didn't want that. We wanted a little bit more class. So we went with PMS 282, which on television can look very, very dark, and maybe not on the new high def televisions, you know, but back in 1990 when the logo was done or thereabout, I don't remember the exact year, but it was our intent to create an aggressive logo using a nice dark color, but not to use black. And the other conversation around the color was you often ask the people that you're doing the logo for. In that case, it was us. But when Adrenaline goes out and does logos for clients, one of the questions we ask out of about 30 is, do you want a color that depicts a region or a time in history or a city or something historical? Do you want your colors to be trendy, a la what you might have seen in Charlotte or remember when some of the teams came into the NBA as expansion teams, they were going some very trendy colors. And those colors are great for the time, but they can get out of style real quick. It's almost, if you look at cars on the street, every once in a while you see this car that's a bright lime green, and chances are it's owned by somebody who's probably not going to own that car outside of a few years. And that is why the most popular color car in America is white. And number two, I believe, is silver, because people want to buy a color that they know they won't get tired of. Logos are the same way. Another thing that color impacts on a logo is, do you want a logo to look new or do you want it to look like it's been around for a while? And in the case of the Nuggets, we could have gone with a brighter blue, a brighter red, and a brighter yellow or a gold, but we wanted colors that represented a team that had been around for, at that time, I think it was just a little over 30 years. My numbers are getting a little crossed, but I remember doing the 25th logo or the 35th logo, but we wanted a logo that didn't look like it was a expansion team logo. We wanted something that looked like it had served the test of time and something that could have a long shelf life after it was introduced.
So I think that's all really good stuff. And it speaks sort of to the authenticity too, right?
Right.
And something's been around for a while and it's still around. It's classic.
It speaks a ton to authenticity because, again, you can see trendy garment companies, trendy companies will tend to do things to make them look trendy and short shelf life. In sports, a lot of times you want to look like you've been there. Right. And people want colors that are going to be accepted and they're going to be appreciated. But you run into issues like the Miami Dolphins, where for years they were orange and aqua green, and their merchandise was probably slipping quite a bit in sales because those are tough colors to sell. So in sports identity, you always have to consider the merchandise. Not everybody can just sell merchandise off of the popularity of a team. Nebraska is a great example of that. You'll see, you know, 65-year-old men walking around in Nebraska with satin red jackets. Yep. It's only acceptable because red is the color.
Every truck in Nebraska is
right.
Red.
They wouldn't wear red. And you know, I'm going back a few years when satin was kind of a cool thing for starter jackets. But I know people that wouldn't wear that jacket if it didn't have an N on it. So when you think a color, it is very representative of the not just the team, but it's got to be something that people will wear. Miami Dolphins, and I'm a fan of theirs, that's why I know, but they added a third color to their logo about 8 or 10 years ago, which was a dark blue. And it moved them up in the rankings of merchandise sales, you know, exponentially, because all of a sudden people could wear that color. And that is really something you have to take into consideration when you are picking colors for a logo in sports, because again, it's not just representing the team. It's a merchandisable, sellable item. It's right. A fashion.
It's a big deal, right?
Look what the Raiders. I mean, those guys sell off the shelf to people that aren't even football fans.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the Raiders, but I get it. I mean, they have a cult like nobody else does. And it's really an interesting thing. And especially, I think if I was you, my head would be a little bigger, or I would be out of control a little bit, because you've done something that most people can't claim to do, where you have created the bat signal for every hockey fan in the world when it comes to the Av stuff. And that's a pretty big deal, right? They might as well shine it on the clouds before a game, because everybody knows what that is and they rally around it. People who I wouldn't talk to, people who I wouldn't hang out with, they come together under this umbrella of sports, and this is sort of their logo. This is their pharaoh carved in the wall in the middle of the pyramid kind of thing. That's a lot of pressure. Whether you felt it when you made that or not, or if it's something that came to you later as you go through other ones, or if you just don't approach it that way.
Well, I don't approach it that way because, you know, my job is creative director. So I oversee a project, and there's some really good people on my team. Back when the Avalanche needed a new logo, you know, it was guys like me and Mike Blake and Sean Hunter, and Michael Beindorf was my art director, who actually concocted the sketch that was the A with the snow flown around it. So it was his original idea. You know, I started with some sketches of the full word Avalanche, with snow coming off of that. And from that came, you know, maybe he was at the same time working on an A and simplifying it. But, you know, we were all, you know, you're always naive. I mean, because as you move on, you learn more and you look back at what you knew and you're kind of like, wow, I can't believe we did that. But we worked as a group here, and then we worked with the NHL. So they had some talented people like Joe Bozak, who has his own agency now, and continues to do some amazing sports logos. David Haney was the creative director at the NHL. He now works with Joe. So it was Haney and me and Beindorf and Joe Bozak and Sean Hunter and other people from the NHL, and we were all collaborating on this project. So you never really had a chance to say, this was mine, or this is me, and this is, right. You know, and you... You go out of your way when people assume that you did the logo to explain the process. Because trust me, it's not uncommon when the logo was launched to walk into a restaurant with one of your friends, and the first thing they want to share is that this is the guy that did the Avalanche logo.
Right.
And it's like, then you got to backpedal and go, no, this isn't the guy. This is the guy that was in charge of the creative team on the Avalanche side. And there was another group that was in charge of the NHL creative on the NHL side. And we walked back and forth on concepts and designs until we finalized it.
That was one of my questions for you, is when you were done, when you finally had to press send, metaphorically, of course, mm-hmm. Were you happy? I mean, were you done? Because I've done a lot of projects where even up to the very end, I still feel like I could tweak or I could do something else.
No, there was a level of polish that the NHL brought to the table that I thought really nailed it. Between, you know, you and me and the listeners, I'm a big fan of the Avalanche logo. I'm not a big fan of the Avalanche word mark, which was a big part of the process, but it certainly wasn't as big a part as the simple shield that goes on the jersey. You know, depending on the sport, hockey logos tend to be very big shields that are, you know, 12 inches on the front of your jersey. It's a chest plate. And, you know, you don't have that in basketball necessarily. I mean, I think Golden State has it, but there's some teams that don't have the big logo plastered on their jersey at all. We think they do, but they really don't. Hockey's unique that way. So you spend a lot of time working on that primary badge versus word marks, secondary logos, and those types of things. And, you know, we also did the Coyote logo as a team at Adrenaline. Right. We went through that recreation. And you know, selfishly, I take a lot more pride in the Coyotes logo.
Why is that?
Because it was more of my responsibility as an owner of an agency that was hired to do it. So we didn't work with the NHL. We didn't work with anybody else. It was the team at Adrenaline that solely worked on that project. Now, again, solely I say that, but there was people like Brett Rogers that worked for the Phoenix Coyotes at the time that brought us into the process and certainly had some ideas that were brought to the table. But they knew what they wanted. We started off that project with a very deep level of research and which is common for Adrenaline. We never assume we know what we need to know. We go out and do great levels of great depth of research to get public opinion on what people would want to see in a mark. Mm-hmm. We didn't have that luxury with the Avalanche, but the Avalanche was unique in that it was a new logo. New logos are sometimes easier because there's nothing to compare them to. But to go in and rebrand a team like the Coyotes, then you always know that people are going to compare what you did to what they already had. And even in the case of the Denver Broncos, I heard rumor that when the new logo was introduced by Nike, you know, 80% of the Bronco fans didn't care for it.
There's still a lot of people that mash the logos together. I've seen that quite a bit, yeah. Or who just prefer the first one. But I mean, you could argue too that if people care passionately either way, you've won. If they're indifferent, maybe that's the worst possible scenario.
Well, I think when you have a new Broncos logo come out onto the scene and people are telling you that they don't like it, yes, there's a level of fanship, a level of loyalty that they have to the team, and they just can't imagine change. And I think what you've seen in the last 5 or 6 years in sports, where there's this whole retro movement and everybody's bringing back the old stuff and the probably even going further back than that, but where, you know, players and teams are doing the throwback days on the field, and it's all a move to sell merchandise. I mean, let's be honest.
It's the third jersey in hockey,
it's just the third jersey in hockey.
Although that's an awesome third jersey. Anything to do with that one from your team?
No. We didn't work on the third jersey
at all.
Have
you seen it, though?
I've seen the latest one where the one that I was familiar with was about five years ago, where it was just the Avalanche type across
right.
the burgundy
very
with
collegiate.
Very collegiate. I'm trying to think of the new one. You kind of caught me off guard.
So it's very Colorado Rockies inspired.
Yes. It has the triangle.
The triangle without
absolutely.
The ridges.
It looks like the old Rockies. It looks like the old.
There's no way they weren't going for that. And they have the big C from the flags.
Yeah.
I mean, it's clearly what they were doing, right. But they took the color story and blew it up and a touch darker. And I'm not sure why, though, now that you brought up the sort of authenticity of darker colors or more muted, maybe not as saturated.
But I think it just becomes fashion. I mean, it really is a movement just to, it's a great revenue generator, you know, and when you go to the games, how many times do you see a guy walking around in a Quebec Nordiques jersey, you know, almost kind of showing this badge of honor that he's been a fan longer than the other guy.
He's old school.
He's old school. You know, I've been a fan of this team before they came here. Or you see, you know, somebody wearing a Forsberg jersey from Sweden.
Yep.
And people are nuts for jerseys, and they're nuts for representing the history of a team on their body. So I applaud the NBA and I applaud every league for recognizing that. And not only within the sports realm, but it's become a fashion outside of sports. I mean, the NFL makes women's jerseys now that are cute and pretty and everything else with little sparkles
right.
sewn onto
catch
them.
And, right. Big yeah. LCs, and nice tailored ends.
Yeah. And you see people wearing them, you know, that probably aren't even fans. They're just really cool jerseys. And
it makes you a part of a group right away, though. You're in Absolutely. The group if you're wearing that. It's almost like a church for sports. You can go there and people accept you as long as you're wearing the right jersey.
Right. It's interesting. You're right. And I just watched a recent video. I'm trying to think of the guy's name, but he wrote the book, Ask Why, I think was the title, but don't quote me on it.
Simon Sinek.
Start with why. Great speaker. And he was talking about how, you know, if you're in a foreign country and you meet somebody and they say they're from the United States, that you just instantly form this friendship.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same in sports. You know, if you get on a crowded bus and somebody else has an Avalanche hat on, there's just a bond there, not quite to the level of cauliflower ear for wrestlers, but certainly, or Marines with their saying that they can share with one another. But there's a bond that's formed.
So I don't ride a motorcycle, but mm-hmm. I travel a lot. I see people on them. And if a guy in front of me on a motorcycle sees a guy coming the other way, they have this kind of two finger point to the road. Right. They do.
Yeah.
And I always do it in the car with them. It drives my wife insane.
Oh yeah.
She's always what? But
well, it's funny. I mean, I bike. So sometimes you see bikers and they wave to you only because you're on a bike and they're on a bike. So we must be sharing something in common or you see people that drive Jeeps, you know, and they wave to each other. It's funny how we fall into these categories.
But it all comes back around. Like if you're in a Jeep and it's bright green, you probably don't have the same respect as if you're in a Jeep that's a little beat up.
Right.
Maybe you put some Bondo on a fender or cut the fender off, whatever, right? There's some authenticity there still.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I'm a big YouTube fan. I love going and just watching how people will push themselves in a vehicle to get through a hole in Moab. To the point where they'll flip a brand new Jeep just to show some sort of courage.
Yeah.
I mean, once I drive a Jeep. It's never been on the dirt. It probably never will be. But
my understanding is they're not as reliable as people think. We're in the market for a new car. We have been for a long time, but we're like at 200,000 on this current one we have. But, you know, it's one of those things where I have to admit there's a certain part of, do I want to be on Team Jeep? If I'm thinking about buying a Jeep, like, do I want to be that guy driving down the street in the Jeep? Is that represent me? Because I feel much more Lamborghini than Jeep right now. I just can't get in that game yet.
No, it's a great point. You know, when you think about branding in a broad scope, oftentimes people think they don't really understand it. But when they're building their own brand, it's built by what kind of car they buy, where they shop for their clothes, where they live. And it's a good way to explain to people the power of branding because the minute you say to them, you know, why are you driving that car versus this car? There's a stigma that comes with it. And I will tell you with a Jeep, it was a car that, my wife just loved. And the best thing about a Jeep is not the reliability, not the gas mileage, not the safety. And I'm talking about the Wranglers, not the Cherokees and everything else, but the resale value on a Jeep in this state is amazing.
It is.
I have a 6 year old Jeep that's worth more now than what I paid for it.
And you could put that right up there with Harley Davidsons. Really.
Absolutely. Well, I was going to say Jeeps and Harleys are really the same. They're not reliable. They're not comfortable. They're not a lot of things, but they are what they are.
So if you unpack that, what's happening there? Is it because of the way it makes you feel? Is that what this all comes down to?
I think it's a couple of things. I mean, first of all, when you think of a Jeep Wrangler, when you think of a Harley, there's nothing else like it. I mean, Honda, Yamaha, Suzuki, all these bikes try to make something that looks like a Harley, and they've gone so far as to even hide their own names on their gas tanks. I mean, you'll see Hondas that don't say Honda except for on the cylinder. But nobody can give you that V rumble that the Harley gives you. And when you think of Jeep, there's no other vehicle that looks like it. I mean, Suzuki Samurai might have been the closest thing, and I'm not sure. I've been told they're amazing off-road vehicles, but nobody else makes a vehicle like a Jeep. So it's if you think of getting a new four-door sedan, you have 100 choices. But if you think of getting an off-road, all-terrain, removable top vehicle, there aren't a lot of choices.
So we press pause on our conversation with Dan Price for a minute because clearly we've meandered, we've gone down rabbit holes, and we've digressed. But this is what happens when you speak to somebody who speaks your language and it's about something you care deeply about. So we're going to bring this back to center. We're going to bring this back to something a little bit more abs with a question or a comment that we got from Grant Berry or Vote for Grant on Twitter. He said maybe the 10-year logo was a secret glimpse at what the Extreme logo was supposed to be. So not being above a conspiracy theory, I asked that question. So the Avalanche did a 10-year logo.
and it looks like an X, and it has kind of the avalanche coming around it. And a lot of people think that this has something to do with what the logo was going to be originally, because they think that the Avalanche were originally going to be the Extreme. I think there was like three different ones. I remember laying in my bed hearing about this team coming to town. I was in college, I think, at the time, just getting into college. And they're like, what do you like better, right? And I'm not entirely sure that people were even supposed to know about this yet, because it kind of seemed like the organization responded poorly to suddenly people cared about what the team name was and they had a say in it. And so a lot of people think that that X is actually what the original logo looked like when we were going to be the Extreme. Is there any validity to that?
Absolutely. I don't know if there's any connection to the 10-year anniversary logo and the original logo.
Do you know them? Have you seen them?
Yes, but okay. And you can bring one up. I didn't work on it at all, so I'm not that familiar with it. But I can tell you that. There it is. Yeah,
and this is from one of the listeners too. He wanted. So
yeah, I don't think that has anything to do with the original logo concept. I think that is truly a 10-year anniversary mark. It's funny when you do logos, you go to these websites and we oftentimes will put little hidden elements inside logos. Inside the Phoenix Coyotes logo is a phoenix. At the bottom jaw is a bird. Inside the old Invesco Field logo, we had six spikes that represented the six counties that voted it in.
Right.
So there's always these little things that you can put in there. I've been to websites and looked at logos that I've done, and people have found things in them that I didn't put in there.
You do get credit for that, right? So this isn't the exact shirt, but this is one I did for Soderberg, who plays for us. And the two little dots on the Viking helmet, that's actually the umlaut, I think is how you say it. But in Sweden, if you have an O, it would have two dots over it.
Okay.
So that kind of stuff I take credit for, but I get a lot of credit for things I haven't done too.
Yeah.
Right? And this is sort of, it takes on a life of its own, but the ownership transfers too. Like, there's a guy in here who's very concerned. He thinks you're still doing the logo. And maybe you're doing something with them, I don't know. But he wanted me to make sure, it isn't even a question, he just wanted me to make sure that you don't mess with the logo, don't redesign it, we love it just the way it is.
Yeah.
He used some stronger words, but you know, leave it alone.
You saw about the Avalanche logo?
Yeah.
I would never be a part of a redesign of any kind. I mean, if they came to us and asked us to help, then I would certainly enjoy doing that, but I don't have conversation with them. I mean, the Mammoth logo is the last logo we did for Kroenke.
You think you'll do any more for them? I mean, they have other adventures too, right?
Not necessarily. No, I don't know. I mean, the Rapids was done by SME out of New York. And I mean, I would love to do more work with Kroenke. You know, I would love to work with everybody. That's the nature of the beast. But I don't lie awake at night hoping to make revisions to the Avalanche logo. It was a time in history, and I've moved on. But
is it fair to say that you have more sports clients than you do anything else?
Absolutely. You know, when you spend 10 years in the sports world, you make a lot of connections, because everybody that works with you, for a fair amount, a fair amount of them move on. You know, they go work for the Coyotes, and now you have a new team that you can work with. So most of our work, because of when we started Adrenaline, which was the day after I left the Nuggets and the Avalanche, it was, you know, we came out of the gate with the leader in sports-specific design and marketing. What was our slogan now that I'm trying to think of it? The leader in sports-specific design or something. But it was all about being sports. And it's stuck with us, and it served us well. You know, we have other clients. We have the City of Aurora. We have Dasbach Coffee. We've worked with the Ballet. We've worked with Chicago Auto. But everything we do evolves around this participatory or spectator avenue, and some call it lifestyle. But you know, we have Arapahoe Basin Ski Area has been a client of ours, an amazing mountain that we always enjoy working on. But our clientele tend to fall into a category. We don't chase hospitals, and we don't chase insurance companies, and we don't chase the real estate market so much. We do tend to stay in the sports and lifestyle, outdoor realm.
So how often are you out of your comfort zone with a project then? I mean, you've done some of the biggest ones around, right?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, even last night we were doing a city council meeting in Aurora. And when I was introduced to city council, there were four or five new members on city council through some elections in December. Or November. But anyway, there was an introduction that was interesting. I was introduced as an agency that had never done a city before. And yet here we are doing Aurora. Well, we had done some work with Longmont. I don't think I'm ever out of my comfort zone if I'm given the tools to learn the product. And by that, I mean extensive research and fact finding and getting an opportunity for the organization to download what they know. You know, we never pretend to know more about a client than they know about themselves. What we preach is that we have a process for building brands that is going to complement their knowledge of the product, and together we're going to come out with a win. So outside of my comfort zone, it doesn't often happen. Even when you pick up a client that's new to you and it's a new industry, you learn as much as you can, as quick as you can, and then you're not out by yourself. You're working with their marketing team or with their ownership group, and you know, it's a collaboration.
And with your own team, that's the beauty of it. You talked a lot about it's rarely just you. It's always, you know, a team.
Oh, it's never just me. I surround myself with some really good people, you know, whether it's top guys in research or amazing illustrators or graphic designers or writers, photographers. You know, you have your go-to people that I've worked with for over 20 years. You know, my photographer, a guy named Tim DeFrisco that I turned to. We've shot the Harlem Globetrotters together for 16 years. He was my team photographer. You know, he was my team photographer at the Denver Nuggets, at the Avalanche. I mean, we've got a history together. And when the opportunity's right, I bring him in. I've got a research guy in Ron Sellers that he and I have been doing research projects together for 20 years.
So do you mind if we unpack that a little bit? What does that look like? Because for me, I went to school, I got 2 degrees in multimedia, spent a secret life as a photographer doing things like that. It never occurred to me this idea of doing research. And when I'm talking about it, I'm thinking more kind of design thinking, where you actually really dig in and you try to understand the people and almost create like an FBI person would. You have on the wall who this average person is, like who is the person who's going to buy this shirt or who's going to wear this logo, what do they look like, where do they shop, who do they know, why do they care, things like that. Is this your world?
Yes.
Because for me, it was groundbreaking. It changed the whole way I do everything.
It really, you know, there are certain opportunities with clients where they understand the value of it. And it goes beyond that. I mean, we're realistic. We understand that there are some clients that can benefit just from our experience. So doing research for one client is a lesson learned that can be applied towards another client. So when you wrap up the 35 years of experience that, probably 33 years of experience that I have in this industry, if somebody came to me and said, can you help me build a brand? The answer is yes. But if I ask them, do you want to dive in deep and get some public opinion of your product to reassure you of the decision that we decide to go in, then we can do that too. It's surprising how, and I'll give you an example with the Coyotes. They came to us and said, we want to update our logo. We want to just do a head, and you need to come in with some concepts in order to be considered one of the agencies to work on the new logo. So for 3 days, my team here, you know, we crammed and we put together two, and I can show them to you later. It's a really fun case study.
Love to see them, yeah.
We put together two different logo designs, complete with home and away jerseys, word marks, secondary marks, a primary icon. And we put it all together. We went out to their offices and we showed them what we had done. And then I talked to them about research. And my opening line was, you know, you have 5,000 season ticket holders, which isn't great. And if we change your logo and then discover that the only reason those 5,000 people were a fan was because of your logo, then we just made a drastic mistake. Mm-hmm. So I'm not willing to take that chance. And if you want us to work on this project, then I'm going to take you down a path of assurance where we're going to interview people and we're going to find out what they like about the logo and what they don't like. And it was all done in secrecy. Nobody knew that we were changing the logo, but it was a broad interview of what type of logos do you like in sports and what type of logos do you like in Arizona? And, you know, let's talk about the Coyote logo. What do you think of it? Do you like the colors? Do you like the shape? Do you think it's busy? And when all the information came back and the research came back, we had a pretty good idea of the direction to take, but you would be shocked to see how close those original ideas are to the final mark. And we've done projects where we didn't do any research. We put together a logo, and then after the fact, the company will say, well, Dan, I have to go present this to a board, and what do I say if they tell me they don't like the logo, or what do I say if they ask how we came up with the idea? Can we do some research to justify the decisions that we've made? And the answer was absolutely we can. In one case, I said, yes, we can. So the guy had us do the research. It came out favorable for the direction that we took with the logo. Then when he went to present it, nobody asked a question. They all just loved the mark. And he was a little upset with me because we did research. And he thought it was a waste of money. And I said, no, it wasn't a waste of money. It lets you sleep and it gave you the support you needed had you needed it. But you didn't want to do it in the beginning, but you weren't comfortable presenting the logo without it in the end. So I don't think it was a waste of money at all.
I don't think so either. This is like training for a fight and knocking him out in the first 10 seconds and being upset because it didn't go longer.
Because you were trained to go 12 rounds.
I think that was this the IKEA effect. Is this what they call it? If you work on something for so long, you appreciate it more than it's actually valued at, maybe.
Well, and you know, that's an interesting, you know, when you talk about the timing, I've worked on logos where I've had clients pick a logo because they thought it took me longer to produce. And they almost don't want to pick the easy one because they don't think that they're getting their money's worth.
Right.
To me, a great logo is one that looks like it wasn't labored over.
There's something to be said for simplicity, you know? It's peaceful. When you see something that's well put together and it makes sense, and there's certain shapes too, and I don't know them well enough to speak to them, but the Avalanche logo kind of goes against what I was taught. It's very just triangle shaped. If you break it down, just draw around it, it's a triangle, where most of the things I've been taught to create, and granted, most of these are for t-shirts. I grew up in that industry.
Right.
It goes this way, where you want to taper it down because you want to kind of mimic this idea that this guy has a big chest and he's strong, and it goes this way. If you're doing a one-liner that has two or three actual lines on it and it starts short up top and goes long on the end, it just doesn't work. And these are...
Yeah, there's, you know, the biggest thing that I feel is something you have to consider on logo design is the overall proportions of it, the ratios of the design. The Avalanche is a very 3-to-2 dimensional logo.
This will work out, having it on my head. So
and
you can
it
look
works,
at it
yeah, I'm staring at it. And I love the colors on it, which aren't traditional. But if you can do a logo that's in a 3-to-2 format or a 2-to-3 format, then you can own your space. When you do logos that are too horizontal, they tend to get lost, especially when they're placed next to other logos, because nobody knows, do I make it, how big do I make it? It's really long horizontal, but I can't give it that do because then it becomes too long. So I have to make it as wide as all the other logos, which happen to be a 3-to-2 format. And this horizontal logo takes up a tenth of the space and it gets lost on the back of a runner's t-shirt or something where you see a lot of sponsor logos together. So we've always kind of lived in this camp of a 4-to-3 ratio, a 3-to-2 ratio, a 2-to-3 ratio, where it's not quite a square, but it kind of maintains a shape that's easy to manipulate around without interfering the size of the mark. The other thing that's important is we like to make logos that are peelable. Meaning you could take a logo and stick it on plaid, polka dots, stripes, and it maintains its integrity. So if you look at the Avalanche logo, it's contained within a solid outline stroke. Right. And when you look at some other logos out there, like the Coca-Cola logo, which is a word mark, when you put it on a background, it literally has to change depending on what background it's on. So if you put it on red, it needs to be white. If you put it on white, it needs to be red. If you put it on black, it needs to be white. If you put it on a darker color. So they, you know, you have to do variations of a logo. If you do it all contained within a shape, it literally becomes like a sticker and you can peel it off and put it anywhere you want.
You could put it on plaid.
You could put it on plaid.
Logo, it would look fine,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So that's interesting that you bring all that up. For the people who are listening, that I don't know if they're going to know what the word mark is or secondary logos and something like that. Can you just like spell it out for people really quick? So the logo on the chest, what do you call that?
You know, every team has their own identity for it. You know, we tend to, as a rule, call logos primary logos, secondary logos, word marks, and then you can get into second word marks, third word marks, or primary logos with the word mark. There's no science to a vocabulary that is standard across all companies, I would say. In some of our situations, we'll do a logo. We did one company logo that had 72 different variations. And you can't name those primary. You literally just have to say logo underscore one, logo underscore two. And then when you put together the style guide, you identify all that. But what happens in some marks, if they're containing the word and the icon and it's all in one place, that might be a primary logo, but you won't see the primary logo in use. And the Avalanche is probably a good example of that. Their primary logo wouldn't necessarily be a primary logo for another type of corporation where the name's going to be part of it. You rarely see the Avalanche word mark. You might see it on the company's business cards or stationery.
We're talking about Avalanche spelled out.
Yeah.
It looks kind of Marvel almost, I guess, in its font style or typeface.
And, you know, when you consider the Denver Broncos, they have the horse head, and then below it, they have the word Broncos, and then below that, they have the word Denver. So a lot of times you'll see those three together in more of a corporate setting, but rarely on merchandise do you see those three things together.
They don't really have a secondary logo, right, where the Avalanche have
well, hockey is really big with the shoulder patch marks.
We're talking Yeti, secondary, I guess,
right? Yeah, I think it's the Yeti.
We didn't have anything to do with the Yeti, right?
No. Okay. You know, the Coyotes' secondary mark is a shield that mimics the state flag, but it's in the shape of Arizona. So it's it just makes sense for them. Then you have leagues like Major League Soccer. When they first came out, they've completely gotten away from this, but they had kids marks. So every team had the main identity, and then they had a kids logo. So, for instance, the New York Metro, I think it was, who's the New York team? Metro Stars? No, it's not Metro Stars, but anyway, they had skyscrapers in their logo. But for the kids logo, it was a yellow cab, like a cartoon of a yellow taxi. And you can just imagine the family going to the game and the parents buying their t-shirt and the kids going, I want that one.
Oh, yeah, that works
and
out well.
It worked out well. Yeah. You know, for every logo, there's another t-shirt sold. So there's different reasons for when you need primary, secondaries, word marks, all these different things. And one thing to consider is inside the arena and outside the arena. Okay. So outside the arena means that if you're a smaller team and you're not getting the weekly television exposure, that you might get if you're the Broncos, you have a minor league team that, within your stadium, within your region, everybody knows who you are. But if you are a minor league team and you're sponsoring a golf tournament for a local charity and they offer you an opportunity to put a banner up, you want to make darn sure everybody knows who you are. And putting a secondary logo up there or something without your word mark, most people would look at it and have no idea what it stands for. So outside of the arena, there's a level of education and incorporation of more elements than there is inside the arena. Once you're at the Avalanche game, you could see just a glimpse of the curvature of the snow and know that
you're
it's
in context.
You're in context,
arena, right?
Yeah, it's like working with somebody that you know very well, but then when you see them at a mall and they're wearing something other than what they wear to work, it takes you a second.
That happens all the time.
I know this person.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah.
So I told you a little earlier before we get started here about some UFC fighters I know and some people. And I see them in gi. I see them practicing jiu-jitsu. And then I see them at Costco.
Right.
And it blows me away. I'm looking at this little guy going, you know, he's normal looking, but he could absolutely kill me. This guy is a trained killer. And he looks like the guy who's, you know, either checking me out or at the register that is.
Yeah. I got the point.
Right. So, yeah, that's a really good point, actually. But yeah, like I said, I'm just truly interesting to me because you are in a situation where I don't know if people give you enough credit for what you do or your group. I say you. Every time I say you, I mean your group.
Yeah. You know, we're not out for credit, really. It's the thing about design. It's like what you're doing here. There's a passion for it. And when you're done, you want your craft to be well represented. You want people to say that was a great blog, that was a great interview, and to you, it was just another day at the office.
Yeah. I mean, for me, maybe you don't have this, but for me, every project starts with, we got this, we are going to nail this out of the park.
Oh, yeah.
And then, well, there's a little more to it than we thought there might be. And I didn't expect scope creep or whatever to come in. At a certain point, you find yourself going, I don't know how I'm going to get this done. This is not working. You scrap everything I've done in the last month. And then you find to kind of get a spark. And pretty soon by the time you're done, you're like, I knew we could do it. It's right. Like every project that's major that I care a lot about seems to follow that path.
Well, then you can add in, you know, the comments that you can see online. I know when we did the Cutthroats logo, there was a few very negative blogs. And at the same time, they led the league in merchandise sales. So... Can't really argue that.
One of my questions to you that we won't get to tomorrow, of course, was going to be about how you know you've been successful. Is it because the client says so, or because the fan appreciation, or because you walk down the street and you see somebody wearing something you made?
I'm not going to lie. There's something cool about seeing somebody wearing a logo that you've made. There's also something cool about seeing somebody walking down the street with a Dawsbog cup.
Yeah.
You know? But again, it's what you do, and the successes for us, I know this sounds cliche, but it really is when the people that we do work for, they have success with what we did for them. It's when they're happy. I mean, it's the best thing in the world. Nobody wants an unhappy client. And, it's kind of fun to drive around town, you know, especially with your kids when they're little and you drive by Invesco Field and you go, hey, daddy worked on that logo.
So I have an 8-year-old. He asked me if I'm going to meet the guy who invented the avalanche. I'm like,
yeah,
not quite.
Yeah, not quite. But I'll tell you a funny story on the, are we on or are we off?
Yeah, we're on now.
Okay. So we were working on the Invesco Field logo, and we were working with the Metropolitan Football Stadium District, Tim Romaney, Ray Baker. And, we were working on a project, which was the logo and the signage, which was, had to be satisfied. You know, the people at Invesco had to be satisfied with it. So we were meeting in their offices and we had put together the logo. It was approved in black and white. And then we had to come in color. So I had I took the logos of the letters of the logo, and I made each one a different color, like a 5-year-old might do. And I presented that as, we had done a lot of research and thinking about the color. And now granted, this is to the, you know, the top guys at Invesco, and these guys don't laugh much, you know? I even got some opinions from my kids, and I just want to show you what we came up with. And I peeled back the cover sheet, and there was this logo in 15 different colors, and the room just erupted in laughter. And I said, okay, now let me show you the real ones. They kept it. They said, we have to keep this. This is such a funny looking logo.
So that's interesting, because you got a lot going on there. You're anchoring them to start with, right?
Yeah.
Like you kind of,
oh yeah,
you just want to, maybe you've just diffused it at the same time, but yeah.
It was a fun little exercise, but it was a way for me to literally involve my kids and say, well, how would you work on this logo? But it's like, to me, people look at somebody that's great, like Kobe Bryant at basketball. You know, Kobe obviously doesn't think he's great, or he wouldn't be working as hard as he is to get better. To him, he hasn't achieved anything. You know, I mean, he certainly looks back now and he says, my gosh, I've achieved a ton, but 10 years into his career, he wasn't satisfied with where he was. And it's a lot the same for us. You know, I have friends that will say, you know, you've had this company, it's 20 years old, it must be nice, you know, you can kick back and relax. And I go, you know, in my mind, I haven't achieved what I set out to do.
Well, to the point I was making, I mean, I walk in here thinking, wow, this guy must wake up bored. And what could he possibly do other than creating a logo that is so iconic, it's been around for 20 years, that people are begging not to be changed, like, we've done it. But in your mind, you definitely haven't.
No.
You haven't done it. You haven't each did.
There's new clients.
You, right?
There's new challenges. There's new, you know, one of the things I love doing is public speaking. I mean, that's why I wanted to do this with you. Although it's not public, it will go public. But I love speaking at universities. I love speaking at groups and entrepreneurial groups in high schools. And it's something that I want to do in my future. And that to me is a whole new chapter. So I always want to be in the creative space. Whether it's through writing, through design, through storytelling, but something, you know, even I've started to paint a little bit again, you know, to do illustrations and things at home where you're just off the grid, if you will, and you can draw whatever you want. I haven't done anything I like yet, but I'm starting to get back into it. And it's been a long absence. I mean, that's how I got into this industry, was being an artist.
Right. You went to the Colorado Institute.
Yeah, Colorado Institute of Art. Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. Did you grow up in Colorado?
I did. Yeah.
So you're probably the most successful person I know out of that college.
That's an interesting comment because when I was at the Denver Nuggets, you know, the Art Institute, they certainly want to tout their successful students. And you do that by much how we've built this business. You promote the big companies that have entrusted you to change their image. So, you know, you'll hear about how we've worked on the Coyotes and the Chicago Fire and the Dallas Mavericks and the LA Dodgers and the US Olympic Committee. And, you know, I'm always going to tell people about those, but I'm not going to tell them about the Snow Lifes I can't even think of them, but we've done a ton of smaller projects. We've done 5 or 6 or maybe more logos in the Central Hockey League, that have all done extremely well merchandise sales wise. But you kind of go with the bigger names, and it's something that even now, as you sit here and go, what's down the path, what's ahead, there's more big companies out there you want to go after. And I lost my train of thought there for a minute.
No, I know exactly where you're going, and I was kind of losing my train of thought because this is in a different way than I'm used to talking about influencer marketing or influence marketing, where if you've done work for the Avalanche, that gives you a credibility with the next team to go, okay, this guy has knocked it out of the park for somebody who's huge, somebody who's big. You know, that gives you clout walking in the door. And it's a lot to live up to, but at the same time, it's one of those ones where if you walked in and you said, I did my kid's little league team, it's pretty awesome. You like it? No matter how good that is, it doesn't sound as good as I did the Avalanche.
It doesn't matter. There's a level of trust. You know, if somebody along the lines of the LA Kings trust you to help them with their image, that speaks volumes to the next client. And, you know, we always showcase the work that we've done, the clients we've worked with. But it's not a brag or it's not arrogance. It's just, that's what it takes to land the next one. And there's a great level of pride that goes into everything you do, which is kind of the challenge in the industry we're in. You know, you're working as hard as you can for the client, but you're actually working harder for yourself.
Mm-hmm. And you own this company, so there's a lot on the line for you.
Well, Rick Filmon and I own it. And Rick Filmon was, he's a guy that I went to art school with and you know, a very close friend and an amazing business partner. We have kind of a yin and yang approach to everything, and it creates a great balance and it benefits our clients tremendously. But so Rick and I went to art school together. We graduated. Many years later, I ran into him at Old Meininger's, and we started talking again. And then I asked him to come interview at a company I was working for. So we ended up hiring him there, me and another art director that I had at the time. And then I left there and went to the Nuggets, and I had Rick come in and do some contractual work. And then when we landed the Avalanche, I was allowed to hire another art director. So I asked Rick to come join us, and he and I spent a year and a half together over there. And then when we started Adrenaline, it was him and I who left and started the company.
So if you don't mind, just kind of relive for me the whole idea of how did this become your project, the Avalanche logo? So what was that like? You went to work one day and they said, hey, we've got this project.
Well, there was a lot of talk, obviously, of bringing hockey to Denver. And it was never, you know, most of the early on talk was not something I was privy to. It was on a much higher level. But it was about bringing on an expansion team. And I don't know what changed from expansion to relocation, but we were starting to hear rumblings of, you know, the Quebec Nordiques coming to Denver. And at the time, they were an amazing hockey team that just hadn't won a cup yet.
Right. They were right there.
They were, you know, they were the highest. They had more points than anybody in the league the year before they came to Denver, I believe. And I was not a hockey fan. I mean, I had, like you, been to a few of the old Colorado Rockies games, hockey for those of you that don't know, but I was not a hockey fan. I was a big NBA fan. I mean, when I landed the job at the Nuggets, it was the perfect storm and just the opposite. You know, it was taking my love for creative and working for and within an organization that was my love for basketball. I was somebody who had gone to a lot of Nugget games over the years and paid to go, and, you know, I was begging to get courtside and everything else. So at the Avalanche, when we finally landed this team, you know, you're going through a lot. I mean, you don't just up and relocate unless you're the Baltimore.
I know where you're going. Yeah. So,
but there was a lot of planning. But when it was all said and done, I think we had 3 months before the season started.
But did somebody just walk in your office and say, hey,
yeah, I mean, we're doing it. And, you know, there was staff meetings and Sean Hunter was running the show at the time and he and I are still good friends. And in fact, we just skied 2 days ago up at A Basin, but he was in charge and he said, we're doing this, Mark. And, at the time, there's a lot of people that start sending you ideas. Mm-hmm. And I went to our attorney, who at the time was a guy named Ron Sally. And I told Ron, I said, whatever comes in, don't open it. Because I don't want this to be a Baltimore Ravens situation where somebody comes back years later and says the Avalanche logo was their idea and we stole it. So I told him, we can't open anything that comes in, put it in a vault someplace and keep it sealed. Because when we unveil this logo, if somebody had the same idea, and they come to us and say, we stole it, we can take them to their unopened envelope and say, we never saw your stuff. But on the flip side of that, we had companies like Starter and people that were interested in manufacturing the mark, and they were working on logos. And, you know, Sean Hunter and the organization was very adamant about this being a logo that the region and the state could own. So there was Name the Team contest. And then the
within
NHL
your group or within the public
within well we organized it we did the campaign for Name the Team, and there was, you know, it was controlled in a sense that we put some name options out there, but there was probably some open forums as well where people could just submit.
I didn't know this. I thought that somebody, I'm guessing your group, came out with, said, here's three names, what do you like more? I didn't realize there was,
well,
that open up
there
dialogue.
There was probably, and I would have to look back at the old archives, which right. I don't even know where I'd
I'm
find
sure
it.
You don't think about this every
but
day.
It was Black Bears and it was Avalanche and you know, somebody came up with Extreme. I don't know if it, I think it was the NHL. And they,
I remember hearing it.
They kind of had a logo that they presented to us, and we went out to the NHL to meet with them to kind of figure out what this was all about. And, you know, so we saw the Rocky Mountain Extreme logo. We saw some different logos that some of the manufacturers of jerseys were presenting to us. I remember sitting in a hotel lobby and a guy just unveiled 5 or 6 different logos that were done, ready to go. And it was really, you know, I think it was Sean Hunter, Charlie Lyons, Gary Hunter. These guys said, no, we want to do our own logo.
Good.
So, yeah, it was a great opportunity, you know, and we had finished the Nuggets logo as an organization a few years prior. So there was certainly some trust there in our capabilities. But we started the process of sketches and
is again, that like pencil on paper
sketches? Pencil on paper. And, you know, Beindorf, I mentioned him earlier, he sketched out this A with the snow. He still has that sketch. I mean,
I'd like to find this guy in that sketch.
You need to, I can give you his phone number, but, you know, he holds on to that like it's an original Picasso because, it's his baby in a sense. I don't hang on to any of that, you know.
No, I mean, some people want that. I was here. Mark,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I have some pictures of me surrounded on, you know, on the table in front of me are probably 50 different logos. And if you go back to, there was a magazine that was published after we won the Stanley Cup. And one of the pages talks about the logo development. And there's a picture of me with all these logos kind of floating around me.
I'll have to find that too.
Yeah, I'd like to find it as well. I don't know where it is. I probably have it someplace at home in a box. But so, yeah, we started the logo and we were given this deadline of, you know, we have to finish this thing in time for jerseys to be made and everything else. And the NHL, you know, they took the reins on a lot of it. I mean, they designed the jersey. We didn't.
As far as the cut and sew,
the cut and sew, and the socks and the gloves, and, you know,
right.
Whereas with the Coyotes, and I spoke earlier how I really took more pride in that because we did the jerseys, we did the pants, we did the socks, we did the gloves, we did the helmets, we did everything.
So I could see why that would be cool,
yeah.
Though, right? I mean,
yeah.
that's a full image.
I mean, it was a year and a half we worked on that project. We did the Avalanche in 3 months.
If we ever speak again, we have more time. I'd love to know if you considered things like how it would hold up taking a beating, what it would look like after blood got on it or pops.
Well, the NHL does do ice tests. So when you're pretty far along, they will make a jersey and they will skate around on.
So they prototype it.
Yeah.
Just like you would a product.
They, yeah. And they,
okay.
They go out on the ice and they shoot it with the camera.
Somebody
and they see how it's going to look on TV. And absolutely. You know, you have to consider in a standard logo, you could come up with something that really needs to just survive on a business card. When you're working on a sports logo, it needs to survive on a helmet. It needs to survive on a business card. It needs to get enlarged to the size of a projection on the side of a building, 60, 80 feet tall, billboards, trucks. I mean, you really need to think through how this logo is going to survive a lot of situations. I mean, you mentioned, getting blood on it and everything else.
Right.
I've never thought of that quite so much, but I have thought a lot about, is it going to look good small and is it going to look good big?
Right. And I'm sure you thought about the stroke size, happen when you roll it, or what happens when it gets shrunk down.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes,
bleed on a piece of paper. That
people
can make a
want so much in a logo that you literally have to do a second mark that you can embroider, and you have to take things out of it.
So Minnesota Wild, which is a bad thing to say if you're an Avs fan, their logo has so much going on, and they still manage to do it in a way that you can reproduce it.
Yes.
But there's almost too much. You look at it, and you're like, oh, okay, so that's a stream for a mouth, or wait, is that a mountain?
And yeah.
I don't know. I love the simplicity of our logo versus that. Not that that's not good work.
But you're probably a fan of the Boston Bruins and maybe the New Jersey Devils logos, which, I think are gorgeous. So, and, nobody
knows. The New
Jersey
one, when we didn't have a hockey team, I was a big fan of it.
Yeah, and we are New Jersey's our team.
We were season ticket holders to the Rockies. I had a goalie mask. Chico Resch would come down, give me a puck every night. And then I'd go play hockey up in McNichol's little hallway while the game was actually happening. Cause really I just wanted a puck and play hockey in the hall. But
no, one of my favorite things when I worked for the teams was playing basketball at lunchtime on the court. Hockey on the ice at lunchtime,
Yeah, that would be really cool.
I
shot every team we have here locally, major team anyways, with the exception of the Avalanche photography, that is.
Yeah.
And just being in the back halls, as unglamorous as they are, but just to see the inner workings and that kind of ties into what we're doing. This ecosphere, these people who exist in the world to make all these things happen. There's so much going on that people don't know.
I'm fascinated by it.
Right? But
I'm
it's truly fascinating.
It's amazing what it takes to, I've learned this with A-Basin. It doesn't just snow and you go ski on it. It's weeks of prepping certain slopes for avalanche patrol, and the ski patrol out there, cutting X's in the snow for preparation. And it's a ton of work to get a mountain ready, and the people behind the scenes that you never see. It's the same in sports. What it takes to put down the basketball floor and to tear it up and put it down and to put the ice and to get that just right.
Yeah, and these are all people that I intend to find too. Yeah. I mean, right down to the ice girls, just everybody who touches this game in a way that people don't.
Right. For my years at the Nuggets, when I started there was about 24 of us on staff. It was owned by Sidney Schlinker. Very, what would you consider back then a very small operation. And everybody had a night job. So my job in the day was art director, but my job at night was photographer.
Yeah.
So I sat on the court and I took pictures of 800 NBA games. And, I've been stepped on by everybody. And you get back to the locker rooms after the games and an individual that works for you wants his picture taken with Michael Jordan. And you go back and you meet Michael and I never got caught up in it much. I never actually met an Avalanche player
It's not a big deal. When you think back, sometimes you're like,
I have a few autographs. I was a bigger fan of photographing a player, making the print and having him sign that photo.
Right.
Because it was something I did versus, I've got Magic Johnson. I've got very few people.
Would you want them to like it though? Is that important to you? Because for me, there's a certain part of anything I create. I would like the person who it represents or the team or whatever to go, I feel like this.
When you're working for the organization, you can't be a jock sniffer. And I don't even know if that term's allowed anymore. But
I think it works.
Yeah, I think it works. I know it works. Like whether that, or not it's acceptable, I don't know.
You can say whatever you want on this,
but it certainly works. You're there to do a job.
Mm-hmm.
And it means a lot when a player recognizes you for what you do. And I kind of had a, my measuring stick for getting close to players was more based on them recognizing my talents than me recognizing theirs. So there were a few players over the years that I really got to know because they got to know me. They would come into my department and say, "What are you working on?" And I would say, "I'm working on a poster for kids' nights." And they would sit down and they would ask, you know, what it is that you do. We had guys like Tommy Hammonds. I don't know if you remember him.
I know the name.
But NBA player.
Yeah, I know.
You know, when we would do posters, the guy would come prepared. He would bring dumbbells and pump his arms up and give us everything he had. And that was a guy that, you know, I had a friendship with him. Cliff Levingston was another guy that had a cup of coffee here. Fat Lever, you know, Fat
yeah,
and I to this day are
now,
friends,
yeah.
You know, because we worked together on some projects outside of the Nuggets. And I always said, if a player recognized me at Costco, then I knew.
The Costco test we've developed today.
Yeah. So there's, you know, guys like Walter Davis and Danny Shays and just a handful that you truly got to know.
Yep.
And to this day, if I called them up, they would say, hey, how you doing? And those guys you got to know because they appreciated your talents as much as you appreciated theirs.
And I think they recognize that there's more to it than the athlete on the ice or the field. I think they get that these people allow them to exist.
You know, if you're an NBA player, the lifestyle is crazy hard. It's something most people couldn't do even if they didn't play the sport. Just the travel alone would kill them. But to go out and travel, as luxurious as it is, yes, they're staying in the nice hotels. Yes, they have the private jets, but it's not an easy life. And to try and eat a good diet and to be nutritioned, you know, and right. have the nutrition you need to play for 48 minutes, it's a crazy lifestyle. But when you consider how many people work in marketing and how many people are behind the scenes pulling the game off. I'm not even talking about the people that are working on scheduling and I think there's 400 people working over at KSE right now.
At least that, right?
At least to put on events.
At hockey operations, I would guess there's at least a couple hundred going
sure.
on. And that's, you know, from the DJ. I sent you that
right.
podcast with him. I was
yeah.
blown away about what he goes through and how he kind of owns his own
world.
Oh, gosh,
and the equipment managers and sharpening
skates. Those guys are amazing too, right?
Yeah.
But then right down to the ushers, the people who have been there for years and years and have seen more than you and I have seen of any beyond
yeah.
the scenes.
I go back to this day, I go back to a game and I see some of the same ushers that were there when I worked there, and that's been 20 years.
They're not there for the money. I don't know what they make,
no.
but there's no way that's,
no.
you know, they're there
well,
because
how
of that
about,
experience.
You know, the guy that sings the national anthem.
Jake Schroeder. Man, that guy's amazing.
I mean, just to go there every night and sing the national anthem.
Because he never became so popular
yeah.
outside of when he became this, you know, the singer of the nation's anthem. And he does it better than a lot of people.
Right,
do.
Right.
Yeah, I would say
but
he's the
commitment
best.
That's
like
he has.
He's the best barbecue in Kentucky. Like everyone's the best barbecue in
right.
Kentucky, right? If
right.
you're in Kentucky.
Right.
But yeah, for me, I mean, he just, he nails it. You get chills or you don't. There's the test.
But just to be there every night. 41 times a year, not yeah. counting preseason and playoffs.
But his job isn't unlike yours in that he represents something for this
yeah.
group that they rally around. But,
right.
you know, when the players stop and everybody stops, stands there, and they have this couple of minutes where this song's going on, by the end of that, everyone's ready.
Right.
I mean, game
oh, yeah.
on at that point,
yeah.
you know, so.
It's
I don't know. I admire him. I admire you and all the things you guys do, honestly.
Well, I've always been a fan of watching how the power of branding can influence so many people. And even if it's taking a young niece of mine into a pen shop and asking her to guess what the most expensive, how much the most expensive pen is. And she might say $50. And then I find one for $5,000. It's this idea that there's a market for everything. And there's a person who serves that market. And there's a person who benefits from that market. And I love just digging up these little stories like you're doing and, you know, finding this amazing bricklayer to come in and do a project for you and these dying arts that aren't around much anymore, you know, the guys that can do beautiful plaster and the guy, but these artists, you know, these artists that are out there doing incredible things that kind of fly under the radar. Most people aren't even aware of.
I'm sure
what
that
they
was
do.
You at one point. That was me. I worked at 13th and Calumet, the mid logos
yeah.
that I see all over town.
Oh yeah,
nobody knows I had anything.
How
to
many
do with.
How many logos have you done with an oval?
Too many. And there's an oval in the Avs logo, isn't there?
Yeah. Oh yeah, there's a little oval.
Yeah,
ovals
yeah.
are huge.
Yeah.
Ovals are huge. But anyway, it's a fun life. You know, it's a blessed life. It really is. It's.
If you won the lottery, would you do it?
I would on some level. I've thought
would
about
you
that. And I don't,
every day
I don't play the lottery.
Just as a metaphor. Maybe
well,
the lottery for
but,
you is just you.
Yeah. And I guess a good way to answer that too is what's retirement look like? I would hope that somebody wants to hear my comments and opinions and ideas. long after I'm here every day, you know, do I like the idea of going someplace and having a responsibility through my 70s? And absolutely, I'm still challenged, but I think I have things to share. That's where the public speaking comes in. You know, to me, perfect retirement would be traveling the country and doing speaking engagements for people that want to hear what I've learned. I enjoy learning from people that have been through an experience. I would certainly hope that somebody would want to hear what I have to say. And that to me is a future. But no, I don't think that if I won the lottery, literally or philosophically, that I would quit what I'm doing. I just enjoy it. I mean, I still enjoy coming to work every day.
As you should, right?
Yeah.
That makes it worth getting out of bed for.
I love landing new clients. I love the hunt. I love the challenge. I love working with young people in our office. Jessica McGurn's here, and she's been with us for 4 years, and she came right out of CSU, and she leads up our business development. And it's a thrill to just pass on what you know and to see people grow. That's probably the more exciting part of it, the more rewarding than doing a logo.
I think you're doing it right then.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I see when I look at what you've done here. I think it's really impressive.
Well, thank you.
This is exactly why we like In Between Episodes so much. You get to go deep. You get to learn more about the people in and around the game, the people who make it happen, the people who have an impact on your life and you didn't even know it. If you would like to learn more about Dan Price or his design company, Adrenaline, check out the show notes where you can click on any and all of his social media links and find show notes. Many of the things we talked about in here, including some pictures of the original Avalanche logo and some of the logos that didn't make it. On Twitter, you can follow Dan at Dan Price Denver. You can follow Adrenaline at go_adrenaline. Or you can just go to their website where they have all their social media links laid out for you at goadrenaline.com. A huge thanks to Dan Price for coming on the show, giving us the time and being so authentic. If you like this podcast, one, you're awesome. Two, go tell your friends about it. And three, go to iTunes and subscribe. Just search for ColoradoHockey.com or just go to the website ColoradoHockey.com and click on the link that says get it on iTunes. This and every other podcast that we do is brought to you by AbsFam, absfam.com, for the coolest hockey shirts you can't find anywhere else because they're not available anywhere else. They're authentic hockey shirts for authentic hockey fans. Check out the Dutchie, the Landy, the EJ, the Picks, the Barley, the Skilly, the Mag, and so many more. Shirts, stickers, hats, it's all there, absfam.com. Lastly, we know that the off-season is a lonely, lonely place to be, so we want to remind you guys that you can pick up the BSN podcast. Burgundy Brigade is about to pick up their podcast again, and we'll have podcasts coming out almost every single day. We got you covered, folks, because you're awesome. Stay awesome.